you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Maybe you were awakened abruptly and very early by a couple of earthquakes in the Inglewood area. 4.0 magnitude earthquake just before dawn. Also a 3.3 earthquake that was grouped with that. So I know it was kind of a rough morning if you were awakened with both those quakes with only a half hour between them, even though they weren't big ones. We're going to turn our attention now to an economic analysis of President Biden's $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan and the tax proposal to pay for it. Joining us is Chief Economic Strategist at the Progressive Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., also a senior fellow at Wharton at the University of Pennsylvania, Michael Mandel. Sir, thank you very much for being with us. I don't know if you ever get called Mantle. I certainly got called Mandel a lot as a kid growing up with the name Mantle. But appreciate your being with us. But I wanted to ask you, first of all, about what you see as the overall economic benefits of making a very large infrastructure investment like this. What do we get from that?
Larry, I'm so glad you asked that question. The U.S. is in such need right now of infrastructure and investment. We've underinvested for years. We have bridges that are falling. We have highways that are crumbling. We have water systems that are in terrible shape. And we need to put, for the long-term prosperity of this country, we need to put a lot more money in. In the short term, what all this spending is going to get us is jobs. And that's what we need right now. So it's a combination of short-term jobs and long-term competitiveness and prosperity. What else do you want?
Let me ask you just a very kind of simplistic question. Do we have enough construction workers available and trained to be able to staff such a massive undertaking?
That's a great question to ask. Well, you know, what we've had in the recent years is a shortage of blue-collar work, of well-paying blue-collar jobs. So what the construction jobs will do is actually sort of pull people in, they'll get trained, they'll get jobs. It will actually be extremely important for buttressing the lower end of the labor market in a way that it has really been missing in recent years.
What about potential downsides of this on the economy? One of the criticisms I've heard is that this could lead to a significant rise of inflation. Do you think that's a realistic concern?
Well, it's certainly possible, but I think what we learned from the last recession financial crisis is that we didn't go big enough in terms of putting money into infrastructure. Then we thought the recession would be over soon. If we put more money into infrastructure, it would roll out too late to do any good. But I think what we've learned now is that we may be in a deeper economic hole than we think. There's going to be a lot of lingering effects from the COVID recession. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to stay sick for a long time. This pandemic is not over yet. So, you know, there might be inflation, some inflation, but the benefits to the economy in reducing uncertainty, both in the short term and in the long term, more than balance out any inflationary problems.
And we'll get to the tax portion to fund the $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan. We're talking with the chief economic strategist at the Progressive Policy Institute in D.C., Michael Mandel. Also with us from the Cato Institute, the libertarian-leaning think tank, also in D.C., economist Chris Edwards. Sir, thank you so much. Good to have you with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what about the claim of the stimulative effect of all this money going into major construction projects, long-deferred infrastructure needed in the country? What do you think would be the stimulative effect?
Well, I think it would be stimulative, but it would also be anti-stimulative. I see two great inconsistencies in the plan. The first is that most infrastructure in America is actually owned in, by the private sector. Electric utilities and factories and the internet, cell phone towers, and many other things are owned by corporations in America. So this plan, while it pumps out billions of dollars in subsidies for infrastructure, it also raises corporate taxes, which creates a disincentive for corporations to invest in all the private infrastructure we have. So, you know, a good example is AT&T and Verizon and companies like that invest more than $50 billion a year into America's broadband, which is great. We have a fantastic internet infrastructure. But if you raise the corporate taxes on companies like AT&T and Verizon, they're going to have less incentive to invest in that private sector infrastructure. So there's a real tension there. And a second issue is the whole issue of corporate subsidies. President Biden's plan has hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies for broadband and manufacturing and car companies and electric utilities. This is hugely ironic for the Democratic Party, when many leading members for years have complained about corporate subsidies and rightly complained that Trump handed out corporate subsidies. And, you know, to be nonpartisan here, both parties have handed out corporate subsidies, but Biden's plan would pump hundreds of billions of dollars out in corporate subsidies. I think that's it's not needed, and I think it's dangerous because I think it could lead to corruption. And we don't need it. Broadband companies are investing in internet architecture, and that's great. We should get out of the way and let them do it. We don't need to give them more subsidies.
But Chris, weren't you just saying that with this proposed increase in the corporate tax rate from 21% to 28%, that would cut down on private sector investment in badly needed updating that they need to do? So wouldn't the federal dollars that are included in this for very targeted things like broadband, for example, or electricity infrastructure, which we know here in California has some serious deficits, particularly in rural areas where we've seen fires result, doesn't this in part address the very issue you raise?
Yeah, but why would we want to channel hundreds of billions of dollars through Washington? I mean, you know, America's internet architecture has worked tremendously well during the crisis over the last year. You know, millions of people have gone on the internet and used it more, and it's worked tremendously. So I'd say let's not screw around with the system. AT&T and Verizon and other broadband companies are doing a great job. Let's not raise their taxes and reduce their incentive for investment.
We're talking with economist Chris Edwards at the libertarian-minded Cato Institute, also joining us from the Progressive Policy Institute. So the way they're minded ideologically is in the name. Chief Economic Strategist Michael Mandel joining us. And we're analyzing President Biden's proposed infrastructure plan and the proposed corporate tax rate increase to pay for it. We'll continue our conversation in just 1 minute. We're talking about President Biden's proposed infrastructure plan. The $2.3 trillion cost would be covered, according to the administration, by an increase in the corporate tax rate from 21 to 28%. We're talking with Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute, a libertarian-minded think tank in D.C., and his neighbor in D.C. from the Progressive Policy Institute, Chief Economic Strategist Michael Mandel. Michael, let's talk about that increase in the corporate tax rate because, of course, American corporations are competing with other global corporations. If the U.S. makes such a significant increase in that corporate tax rate, does it make it more difficult for those companies to, specifically with, you know, competing against foreign companies that are in the same field as they are, to be able to effectively compete or innovate?
All right, good question. Two pieces here. One is we think that it's important for businesses to pay their fair share of taxes, whatever that fair share is. And there's certainly things that can be done on the corporate tax system that are important to do. But what's interesting about the Biden tax plan is that it includes two big pieces. One is a corporate tax increase, and the other is what they call international tax reform. And it's actually the international tax reform piece that is that we need to sort of put a little bit more sort of thought into, because you know international taxes are difficult and complicated, and what the Biden plan does is it actually makes them a bit more complicated than they are now. And so we're in favor of, yes, corporations paying their fair share in a simple way. And you know what we're looking at this point is how much of this bill needs to be paid for by taxes and how much of it needs to be paid for by borrowing, which the government could do at a very cheap rate. And so we're at a very interesting point at this point where the public policy has to kind of play itself out to see what works. When the Republicans passed their tax plan, they paid for it all basically with borrowing. Okay, the Democrats are being much more responsible than that. They're sort of paying for some of this with taxes, and it's important to figure out whether or not these are at precisely the right levels.
Well, and again, but specifically the competition, and I may be using a bad example. You might have a better one for me, but you know, Apple competing against Samsung in smartphones, for example. If Apple's going to be paying a higher corporate tax rate than Samsung, for example, does that not put it at a disadvantage in the global arena?
Well, the question is, what is Samsung paying in Korea? What is Siemens paying in Germany? And then having a global tax system that works for everybody. I mean, Janet Yellen just came out with the idea for a global corporate minimum tax. We haven't analyzed that. We're not sure where we come down on it. But the fact is that the global corporate tax system is kind of a mess at this point, and something needs to be done about it. And it may very well be that these proposals are good, or they may need some tinkering with them to sort of make them work better. I mean, from my perspective, I start with this bill sort of saying, unlike the other participant here, is that we need to spend more on infrastructure, we need to spend more on manufacturing, we need to spend more on rural broadband. These are all important. And finding the exact way of paying for it is a little bit more of a mix.
We're talking with Michael Mandel, Progressive Policy Institute, Chris Edwards of the Cato Institute. Same question for you about what you see as the effect of the proposed corporate tax increase.
Well, I think you framed it very well, that a lot of industry today is very mobile internationally, and you pointed to Apple, but you know this is true, of course, for you know semiconductor manufacturing and many other industries. Companies like Intel Corporation, you know, they can put their new semiconductor plant in Arizona or California, or they can put it in Taiwan or Vietnam. And our corporate tax rate is important in driving those sorts of decisions. Your listeners can, if they Google KPMG, they can find that the global corporate tax rate is now only 24%. The American federal rate plus the average state rate is now already 27. We're a little bit above the global average. So I don't think that's a good way to go. I think that the Biden administration, if they're going to propose its infrastructure spending, a better way to fund it would have been by user fees. And a good example is airports. So Biden wants to spend $25 billion subsidizing American airports. But the best practices around the world is that airports are self-funded by ticket fees. And that is a more pro-green way to fund infrastructure is by user fees. The people who use airports and all the energy that consumes pays for the airport services, and that limits the demand. This is true for other sorts of infrastructure like highways. We want the users to pay for the infrastructure, and that helps limit the demand, which is both good for the economy and good for a green economy.
Isn't there risk, though, in that if you borrow against the future fees to be paid by passengers or drivers on expanded roads, for example, that if you know things in the environment change and you get fewer customers or fewer drivers, that then the public entity, which is borrowing the money to does it, you know, it's on the line for all that debt.
Yeah, I agree with you. Debt is a bit risky, but if you think about highway funding, our highways are mainly funded by state and federal government gas tax revenues. There's no borrowing involved. It's just current taxes pay for current expansions and improvements in our highway system. That strikes me as a good way to fund infrastructure, because the current users pay for the infrastructure, and it helps limit the amount that they use the infrastructure in an efficient way.
Michael Mandel, Progressive Policy Institute, your thoughts about the user pay for it model?
Well, I'm sort of trying to visualize the Republican members of Congress voting for higher user fees, higher gasoline taxes, and things like that. In my mind is boggling. Okay, I'm boggled by, you know, by the word green at this point. You know, we're all in favor of green taxes, and I think that the question is, how do you sort of find something that is politically palatable in this environment? Republicans have had a history of sort of attacking Democrats for taxes, no matter what taxes they propose. I do think I'm going to go back to sort of focusing on the importance of spending on manufacturing, spending on infrastructure, and starting with that, the exact way you fund it at this point is maybe not all that important. You know, more of it could come out of borrowing, more of it could come out of user fees. What we're trying to do at this point is make sure that we get the money into the economy that is needed in a stimulative and way that supports prosperity.
We have Pug Daddy tweeting at Air Talk, and this is very good suggestion for a future segment. What about closing the tax collection gap? It's estimated that $7.5 trillion over 10 years is uncollected in taxes that are owed. Wouldn't closing that gap be more politically feasible than increasing taxes? Of course, that's politically fraught, because that means substantially adding to the staffing of the Internal Revenue Service. I want to thank our guest, Chris Edwards of the libertarian-minded Cato Institute, where he's economist, and Michael Mandel, chief economic strategist at the Progressive Policy Institute in D.C. as well. Much more to come in the second hour of Air Talk. I'll tell you about it in a moment.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.